You're tuned into We Talk Radio Network.
Come in. Welcome to Mind, Body, and Soul with Big Joe. I am your host, Big Joe, sitting here on this Tuesday night, getting ready for a real good conversation. D-Ray, are you with me? She might be checking live.
D-Ray is in the building. What's up? D-Ray is in the building.
D-Ray is in the building. You doing all right tonight?
Yes, sir.
Well, tonight we're going to have a conversation with Miss May T, if she's here.
She's
Miss
here.
May T? Yep. Hello, how are you doing today, Miss May T?
I am doing great, thank you.
We're going to hold a real in-depth conversation about child abuse. During the interview last week, Métis and myself got to talking because it was, if you missed the last week's show, please check it out. It was a really interesting show, and it brought on a conversation with me and Métis. So we're going to get into that whole entire conversation when we get back. Let's get one more song on. D-Ray, you got me?
Any day now is what I kept telling myself on the last mile on the road to somewhere. I put along the way I saw the wind and the rain, and to my surprise, blew my mind. So many times I had to hold
Welcome, welcome to Mind, Body, and Soul with Big Joe. I am your host, Big Joe. Macy, are you still with me?
I am.
B-Ray had to step away. She had to take care of some things real quick.
Okay.
So it's just you and I right now.
All right.
We were discussing last week, and you opened up my eyes to some things that we hear about, but I don't think we know the extent of the detail of the child abuse in some situations. You were a victim of child abuse, right?
Correct.
Can you explain some of the things that you would have to deal with or some of the things that you went through as a child growing up?
Well, gosh, it's so many things, but as a victim of an abuser, you have to deal with their personality, which keeps you in line, and the fear of stepping out of line. You know the consequence, which is usually brutal and verbal, and it feels nothing like nothing but hate, you know, when it's occurring. But, forms of abuse, it's so many. Just being laid on the floor in the bathroom, and because you let your father come over who left you for another woman, perhaps because of the stress of the times back then and the behavior of you, meaning the mother, that he left. And so the anger builds up over that, and they don't pay child support, so the anger goes on the children due to the stress of the mother. And so we were called one time in New Orleans. We were called upstairs which I was playing with my doll and my stroller. I was 4 years old, and we were called upstairs, and I took my time going up, trying to pull my stroller up with me, and got up there, and she took the stroller and threw it down the stairs, and it burst into all kind of pieces. And so I'm crying, asking, why did you do that? You know, it's all broken. And so she yanked me and threw me in the bathroom with all my others. It was seven of us, six at the time, six kids, and told me to lay down on the floor and stomp me with her foot in my back, you know, as a lesson to teach us to listen to her. Now, I don't even know what the problem was when I was four, you know, and I asked my sisters, and they said it's because we opened the door to let our father in, who brought us Christmas gifts, but he wouldn't supply us with food and rent. And, you know, so, and that's just one. It goes on. I had to watch. We were always hungry. And we lived in New Orleans in the projects way back then at the time, which was really great. I enjoyed it. My mother didn't like it because she was the kind of woman that always wanted better. And she came home one evening, and we had bread, and we had bakers who had donut shops and everything, the beignets. And they would bring all their leftovers to us, because we had so many children in the family. So everyone took care of each other in the projects back then. And but we got some Wonder Bread because my mother didn't get home till 9. So after school, until she got home, we had no food. And she came home with four cans of pork and beans, which is probably all she could afford. But we heard her coming up the stairs, and we had had a piece of bread, and we put sugar in it. And we were twisting it like a sweet roll, because we'd like sweet rolls. And they said she was coming, and I hid under the kitchen in the cabinet. And my mother came through the door, saw my older sister, who was probably 8 at the time, or maybe, I don't know. Yeah, 8. If I'm 4 or around 4, she's 8. And then my other brother, who would have been 5, and told them to come back in the kitchen. She didn't see me under the sink with the door shut. So I opened it a little bit, and she took my sister and put her under the kitchen faucet and was trying to drown her. And so my sister was fighting and hitting her and everything, and she threw her on the floor and told her to go upstairs. And she called my brother in, who was 5 years old, and she turned the fire on the stove and told him to give me a hand. And he said no. He was crying and begging. He was he loved my mother deeply, you could tell, at a young age. So he was like, please don't. Whereas I would have been saying no. You know, I was kind of different. And so she grabbed his hand and she stuck it over the fire on the stove and held it. And he fought so hard, the pain was so bad, he threw himself back up against the cabinet. And she told him to get up and go to bed. So he never went to the doctor. She went up and would bust his boils and everything. And so we would just hear him moaning at night. He'd never get any rest. It was horrible. I don't know how any human being today, just thinking about how that you could look at yourself and be any kind of okay, you know. And she wasn't crazy. So it was a form of anger, hate, and we looked like her and my father, you know. So, but it was just, you know, it was the stress of, I couldn't imagine having six kids and having to do it on my own, you know. I mean, things are different nowadays. You make more money, you know, you can afford and you could do, but then you have to look for child care and this and that. It's much more expensive. But those are just a few of the things that happened.
Wow.
You want me to keep going?
Yes, ma'am, because, again, you know, when we had this conversation the other night after the interview with Ms. Whitney, and please, if you have not had a chance to go and check that interview out, please do. It was a very interesting piece where she was explaining some things, and it ended up bringing up this conversation between you and I. And what was the reasons, if there was any, that you could see that you would be, was it discipline or was it just abuse?
It was stress. One of the scenarios is that I was talking to my sister a few years ago, and I asked her, I said, you know, we were kids and I didn't understand her. Maybe I'm the kind of person, you tell me something and if I don't understand, I'm going to ask you to explain it to me, whereas other people take it and go with it. But if I might have more questions because I want to know the details and I want to just register it all. And so I asked her, I said, you know, I said, we were kids. I didn't know what was going on and why was she so angry? Why'd she hate us? She says, well, I remember one time when I had to ride with her in Shreveport in New Orleans. She had to take a bus with my mother, who had asked her to go to Shreveport, to go to the courthouse because that's where the child support checks go. And there were six kids, and he was only responsible for $10 a month back then. And he wouldn't even pay that.
Wow.
And so when he would come in town, his mother would hide him. And so it took them 3 hours to get there. And they got there, and she went to get her check, and they told her that they didn't have it. And she said when we got back on the bus, they kept telling her to shut up because she said she was wailing so hard. So it was, looking back and being an adult, it was to me a sense of hope, utter hopelessness with six responsibilities. Because back then, women didn't have executive jobs. They were cleaning hospital bathrooms, cleaning poop from beds, you know, mistreated, called names. You know, we even experienced all that. But, you know, so on one hand, I say she's a survivor, but a lot of that didn't end until her latter years, and then there were ways and things I had to do to make her see, you can't do this to me anymore, stop it. You know, it was a form of making you respect me, you know, whereas a lot of my other family didn't do it. But I believe it was, you know, and I remember when I asked my brother who lived with her till he was 33, I told him when he was 27, you need to go live on your own. You need to be a man. And she said, you quit telling him what to do. My younger brother, which is number 7, because she remarried and had one more child. And she was angry at me for telling him that. And I said, the reason I'm doing this is because He is a man. He is not your husband. He needs to go live. If you die, he's not going to know how to do that well. He's not. I already knew from our past he was going to have a big adjustment, and he did at the age of 33, which was so horrible to see. And he and I are close because I stayed close to him to kind of help him through things that he was going to go through, and he's doing fine today. But he left, and I went. He asked me to go and visit her to see how she was doing. This is day three. And I went over to see her, and she was upset. I said, I just wanted to make sure everything was okay. Do you need anything? And she says, no. She says, you know what? She stood up, and she says, that's the last time someone's going to hurt me in my life. So I looked at her because she never, ever told us. We don't know anything about my mother. She never told us anything about her. We couldn't call her mother. We had to call her Nikki. Quit calling me mother because she always wanted us to be gone. You know, so, I mean, it's...
How
it's
old
just
was your mom when she had you?
She had my first sister at the age of 15. You know, because back then they married young. And she married a man in the Air Force. And then they moved. And she came from a family of nine. So back then they also believed in having large families. And so she, everyone had their own big family. And she moved to New Orleans, and she was so beautiful, and then probably get going away from home, lived in Missouri, in the country, Neosho, Missouri, and moved to New Orleans, you know, big-time jazz, everything, and I think she had more personality than my father. He was more laid back, but he was young. But he was a mama's boy, my aunt told me, and said that every time he would come to town, because he was in the Air Force, she would hide him so that my mother, Mickey is her name, would not try to get child support from him or contact him. So she had to deal with all that frustration, but she was 15. So I say that her mind stopped growing at 15, because at 15, if you have babies and you're stressed, you learn to deal angrily all the time, I think. If I'm wrong, someone correct me. But
that sounds
so much.
Like more emotional abuse towards your mom, and then she made it physical towards you guys.
Emotional abuse from what? My father or life? Because it had
from
to have
your
been
father
both,
and
so
life
talking...
because it's, you know, having a baby as a teenager, and then, you know, child support not being paid like it should, and his side of the family is hiding them or hiding him when he's in town, and then
yeah.
the stress of having,
okay.
you know, having the mouth to feed. It's like she couldn't handle it, or she didn't know the appropriate way of going about it. It wouldn't be abusive
exactly.
towards you guys.
Yeah.
So,
you got to remember back then they could not make money. There weren't jobs. You either were a maid, or
right.
you worked in. You know, you were not anything of importance back
right.
then. And so being older, yes, you get it, but we're talking about kids growing up. I mean, when do you think, oh, mommy's having a hard time? You know? So everyone, I think, well, I haven't. I've never seen my mother cry, ever. It was always anger or little laughter. You know, we always had great holidays, except for when we were in New Orleans. But we had the community taking care of us. When she would go to work, we would all stay at home. I mean, now you can't stay at home anymore by yourself. So all six of us kids were at home. You know, and we didn't leave the house, I don't think, you know. But, I mean, you'll have to ask me questions. It's just so much because I'm going from one age to the other. You know, it's just so much that happened. You know, we got beatings all the time. So school was the outlet. You know, we were always hungry. So I would go to school in New Orleans and eat the girls, poor things, the little girls' sandwich. You know, back then you had the two connected desks, and then you put your lunch underneath the desk. I would eat her peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I thought that was the best thing in the world, and she'd start crying at lunch. I can't believe I did that to her.
So you was a lunch bully. So you was a lunch bully.
I was starving. Because when you had your lunch for dinner.
I can't say that's the bully, because the bully, the bully takes your lunch. She was stealing the lunch. So
well, what's the difference between taking and stealing?
Early thief. I was, but I wouldn't take it. I would sit there and pull a piece of it off and eat it in her face and thinking, you know, as a kid, you don't think anyone's watching. You know, it was that kind of thing.
You said sharing is caring.
I never even said that. All I thought was that sure was good.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I mean, it, you know, it's just things like that. But I do miss New Orleans.
Because of you guys ate bread.
Yeah.
She whooped. She tried
because
to drown.
Because we only had one loaf of bread, and God knows how long that was supposed to last.
Well,
and that
people,
was the whole thing.
Long.
I get it now, but back then we were starving, and it was 9 o'clock at night. You know, so if you eat at noon at school, you have to wait 9 hours as a kid to eat. You know, you're just starving. And then when you eat, you only have a certain portion. We had breakfast at school that they served us, you know, and I think we had lunch at school also. And then that was it. But yeah, she tried to drown my sister. That was a, so you know, our home was a home of. It wasn't fear for me. It was a home of horror. I mean, the kind of horror when I could remember. I think I was 14. I was sitting talking to my brothers, a lot of my other sisters and brothers, I guess. Four of them had already left home, and she just all of a sudden in front of my stepfather and my two brothers, she says, you know, you're my ugliest child. And, you know, I'm like shocked. I'm like, why would you say that to me? And I was 14, so you're not the cutest at 14. You know, you just are not the cutest.
Yeah.
And I never thought about being cute, really, because we're a beautiful family, but we were never taught or treated like we were beautiful. We were always MFers, any kind of name you want to call it. And your father's a SOB, let me remind you of that, that kind of thing. But she told me that, she says, you look at you, you're the ugliest child. Look at your mouth. Your lips are huge, and my lips are not huge. But I grew up after that thinking, oh, my God, my lips are huge. I can't wear red lipstick because it's going to make them look larger. And I don't have large lips. So it's just that. But I got sick of her saying it, and I said, well, if you don't like us so much, why did you keep – because I was curious. I said, if you don't like us so much, why did you keep having kids? And she was smoking her cigarette, and she just turned her head, and I thought, well, I'm going to get something thrown at me today. And then I looked at my stepfather, and he had the look of hate on him. And I thought, if I was 18 – I would tell you, which I loved my stepfather. He was very, if we got a spanking, it would be gentle because he didn't like hurting us, you know. But he looked at me, and I told him later in my 20s, but I would have told him, you're stupid for staying. And I asked him in my 20s, why in the world did you stay there? He says, because if I had left, she would have killed you. I said, death would have been better than living with her. And he just looked at me. I was serious because I could not imagine anyone wanting to go through that and being okay. You know, you're just, oh, yeah, this is fine. I hated going home every day after school, you know. I got a severe beating when I was in the 10th grade, and I was on the tennis team, and I was really good at tennis. And the tennis coach, which was a senior, he really liked me, and, you know, I thought, ooh, things are great. And I told my brother to go down the street and see his girlfriend. My mother said, don't leave the porch. I said, it's just down the street, you know, being that way. And he went and came back, and she came out where I said, he's down the street. She says, and when he gets back, both of y'all come on in. And I said, she wants us to come in. We went in. She had that belt on him and was beating him severely. And then she came at me because you told him to go down there. She got an extension cord. So I was beaten badly, and my stepfather told her to stop. He never intervened. This time he said, stop it. And he grabbed her and pushed her away. I went to school with dry stabs of blood that had been coming out of my leg. And I thought, at that point, I went into an alternate state. I thought, what am I going to do? I'll act like no one is around. That's the only way I could walk out on the tennis court, in white shorts, white tennis shoes, white top. And the two tennis coaches met me halfway. It was a distance. And they said, come with us. And we went to the principal's office. And I felt nothing. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't even care. Death would have been great. It didn't matter. And not that I was going to kill myself. You know, I never thought about that. But the policeman came in and didn't faze me, never thought, And they said, Trina, could you tell us what happened to you? I said, where? They said, your legs. I said, oh. They said, well, we're going to let a nurse fix you up. And I said, okay. And I said, well, my mother, she whipped us. And does this happen all the time? Oh, yeah, all my life. Well, what did you do to get this? And I told them, that's all you did? Yeah. And she beat you? Yeah. Is this the worst? I said, oh, no. We've had so many other bad things happen when she got angry. She says, Trina, we may have to remove you from your home. I said, okay. She says, are you okay with that? I said, I am okay with that. I said, but I have one request. I'll never forget. They said, what is that? I said, if you remove me, you can never put me back over there. And why is that? Because she'll kill me. And they just sat there, and they said, okay, you don't have to dress for the rest of the month. Okay. I thought, boy, this is cool. So I would go to study hall and do all kinds of things. I got to kind of do whatever I wanted. But when I went home, my mother never said a word. She didn't look at me. She didn't speak to me. So me and my sister said, I bet you the policeman went to the house. Someone had to go to the house. Yeah. But my mother, she's never told us she was sorry for anything.
Did the beatings continue after?
I never got another beating. After that, it was throwing things. And in verbal, you know, which was then my thoughts were, I can't wait till I grow up to get out of this joint.
Wow.
Now, the interesting thing for all of us is that we didn't really understand the depth. We can understand you being stressed and angry and wanting to take something out on your kids a little bit. But when you want them dead and you're okay with that, and then you might cry later, but you just want them dead because you are hurt. And I was taught, I went to counseling when I was 22 because I decided at that point my mother would still treat me verbally and attitude-wise the same way. I thought, I never wanted to put up with any of it. My other sisters and brothers would go endure it. I said, I'm not doing it. So I went to counseling, two visits, and she told me, she says, well, it's hard to believe your mother's doing this. She says, have you had adults tell you that? I said, all the time. I said, don't even tell them anymore because they don't believe me. And she says, well, let me tell you how I want you to deal with your mother. You listen to your mother. You let her rant and rave. And when she finishes, you tell her, I do hear what you're saying and I understand what you're saying. But also I understand that those are your feelings inside of you. I don't own those. My mother lost her mind when I did that. I thought that was the best, and I never really had a problem with her again. Because she told me, she says, when you do this, she said, when she talks to you like that and you accept it, it's like the mirror's in your face. You're looking at the mirror. But when you let her know, these are your feelings, I don't own them, then the mirror's on her. And then she said, she's going to get angry. But just ignore that. But it'll teach her a good lesson that she needs to respect you. And it worked. Now, she never spoke to me again. You know, we did not. That's the one thing I regret is that I didn't have a relationship with the earth or what God so calls as your mother.
Okay.
Did your mother have a relationship or
with what?
Any kind of with God or any type of church?
My mother went to church when they were in the country. We went to church there. We went to Missouri and lived there when my stepfather, who married her, and we had to go live there while he went to France. And so we had church, and we had, you know, the picnics after church. It was a lot of fun. When we moved to Fort Worth when I was 14, in New Orleans, we were Catholic. You know, she would go to church with us. And when we moved to Fort Worth, she didn't go to church, and she would wake us up in the morning on Sundays, cuss us out, tell us to get our so-and-so asses out of bed and get, you know, and it could be storming outside, and I'm so afraid of thunder. Even today, I don't like the sound. I think it's going to hit me in the head, but we would have to go anyway. And so they would always say, "Where's your mother?" "Oh, she's at home." It was nothing to us. They thought it was strange a parent would send their kid to church and just leave them there and they wouldn't be there. Now, I think in New Orleans, see, I was born and I was in the hospital for 6 months. I had asthma. And so being in New Orleans, my mother came and got me, or I was released from the hospital because my mother went and found a lady who came up with a potion that healed me. That's how I got out of the hospital. That's why I believe in old-fashioned medicine. You know, I think it's more effective than a lot of this stuff today, and perhaps more healthier. And so she then, when we moved to Fort Worth, we saw that we would hear things blowing up in the garage, small blow-ups. And I asked my brother, "What is that sound?" "Oh, she's doing a potion." And I'm like, "A potion for what?" You know, that witchcraft stuff. I'm like, "Oh, my God." Yet at the same time, she would send money to Reverend Ike because he was going to send her a piece of a silk pillow, pillowcase. You know, so it was that lost religion kind of thing, that no relationship with God, that searching. She was searching, you know. But today, I don't see, it's just a few, it's one, two, I think it's three of us that go to church. So I think for them, as I had also and overcame it with the lady at the age of 14 who became my mother from the age of 14, and I knew her up until her death 17 years ago, who we always talked about God, and she taught me a lot about life and about womanhood. I learned nothing from my mother, you know, none of that. But she, you know, the other siblings don't go to church. I think because why would God, and that was always a question for me, why would God feel it's okay to place you with someone like this? Because he already knows what's going to happen in life. So why do you think it's important that I be with someone like this? Why would you put me in that situation? And today, I still don't have an answer except for it was his choice and he had a purpose.
All right. He had purpose. He wanted you to tell your story.
Wow.
Well, we could have done this another way. I have a few questions for him, but I think I know better.
You want to be speechless right now. That's
right.
How is the relationship between you and your siblings? Before I even go to that, you said that she had how many kids by one husband?
Six.
Six. And then another one with another man?
One, yeah.
Did she treat you guys differently than the way she
and
treated
she told us.
Once?
She said, "This is my son. Y'all are in our family. This is my family. I always wanted." Okay, hey, I don't care. I can't wait till I'm 18 so I can go out and live life. You can have whatever family you want. Just don't act like I'm not here. that was my take on it. They always call me flip at the mouth because I didn't think I always spoke my feelings. My sisters told me 5 years ago that we thought you were spoiled. I wasn't spoiled. I was young, and they were picking on me all the time. And so my mother would tell them, leave her alone. And so they would get angry. But then if anyone got a whipping, we all got a whipping because we were all hated and whatever. But our relationship, you know, when my mother passed, actually when my mother, before she passed, 4 years, maybe three, before she passed, I had a vision. At 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, I'll never forget, I lived in Las Colinas, and I sat up in the bed and I thought, oh, my gosh. And the vision was, it was a white doctor who called me, and she said she wanted to speak with my father's name. And I said, who? And she named him again. I said, why do you want to talk to him? And she says, well, your mother comes here a few times a week because she was doing dialysis, we found out. But she never told anyone. Everything was always a secret in her life. And I said, well, he's been dead for 20 years. She says, no. She said he was at home. I said, he's been dead for 20 years. I said, what is she coming? I didn't really understand dialysis back then. I said, well, really, what is it? What's she doing? And she says, well, it's where we clean the blood. But I said, well, I didn't even know she was sick. And she said she had lung pancreatic, ovarian, and kidney problems. And I woke up,
oh, wow.
And it was no doubt it was real. And I called my friend. Her name was Margie, that I'd known for years. That was my mother, and I told her what happened. I said, I have to call and see if this is true, but I don't want to deal with her mouth. She says, you're going to have to call her. She says, just pray about it before you call. And I did. I said, Lord, please help me to call her. And she doesn't go off. I don't want to hang the phone up. And so I called her at 9:30 and spoke with her. And she said, hello. And I said, hi, Mickey, this is Trina. Yes. I thought, oh, Lord. Instantly it does something to me. And I said, I just wanted to talk to you for a minute. I had a vision. And I wanted to about you, and I wanted to tell you about it, and I told it to her. And in the end, she says, well, very calmly, but there's nothing wrong with me. I mean, I had my uterus removed, you know, 3 years ago, and I'm fine. And then 2 years later, I said, well, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know, you know, because I thought, I know I'm right, and I know you're lying to me, and that's okay because it's your business. And 2 years later, you know, my brother, I said, why didn't you tell me she was on dialysis? How did you know? I said, I had a vision. He says, a vision? He didn't know what I meant. But he says, yeah, I take her every week, two times during the week, but I didn't know what she was doing in there. You know, that was my younger brother who, I think he was 9 years younger than me. But, and then she died three years after the, well, actually a total of 5 years after the vision from all of those. But I will tell you this, 2 weeks before she died, my nephew came over to my home. I lived in Frisco. He was angry. My nephew was 22. He was pacing the living room. I said, what's wrong with you? He says, I just came from your mother's house. I said, oh, how's she doing? Not well. I said, well, what happened? She's just wailing. I said, wailing is a strong word. Is that what you mean? He says, yes, I do. She was wailing. I said, wailing, crying, wailing? He said, yes. I said, for what? He said, she was rocking in my stepfather's rocking chair. We couldn't get her out of it, but she kept wailing, and she kept saying, I've treated so many people bad. I've treated so many people bad. I am so sorry. And they said they were telling her, well, you need to call them and apologize. She says, I can't. I've treated them real wrong. And so they said, you've got to call her. And my nephew said, Trina, I got so angry because we couldn't get her to call someone that I left the house. And he says, I'm never going back there because all she has to do is say I'm sorry. And she wouldn't do it. She did it to one brother. She made one call. And it, you know, did. I mean, when you have to remember, you're putting your child out of everything we went through it was all horrible to every individual, but when you have to watch your own mother put your little brother's hand in the fire and the way he flew out of her arm, she was holding him tight. He flew out of it from the pain. I can't even fathom. I cringe to this day. And then to remember that, it's like, how do you forgive? But he is the major one that has deep love for my mother. I tell him all the time, he says, why do you keep talking about that? I say, because I'm so amazed by it. I'm amazed for his love for his mother. You know, I am not that way. I love my mother because I wished, because she did the best she could. And that's what I could come up with. I hate that she had so much pain and sorrow because I don't have all that, you know, and I don't want all that. And in a way, I made sure that I did not have a lot of that, which is also not good, you know, because you could overdo everything when you're thinking you're going to avoid something. But, you know, but yeah, it's just so much. You know, it's like it's just so much. Now, let me put place in here that we had excellent Christmases when we were with our stepfather. You know, they were, my mother was the most excellent cook you could ever find. I haven't had any food like my mother's ever unless I go to New Orleans. You know, so, you know, she was good at a lot of things, but she didn't have a lot of friends. You know, she would cuss just about everybody out that she felt like it. But I think she was intimidated. I think she was intimidated by other women having relationships where they cared for each other and that they were kinder to each other. She'd just start cussing them out and put them out of the house and didn't care how she treated people. Just didn't care about no one, how they felt, no nothing.
How is your relationship with your siblings now?
When she died, growing up, we didn't have time to learn to love each other because it was so much pain growing up. And it was more pain than laughter because you didn't know when she'd go off, you know, that kind of thing. And she always tried to give us up to the Lena Pope home, which was a home that you take kids you don't want or put them in a home. And So I would always scream, I don't want to go. But I remember growing up, we were never really close because I think everyone was trying to fight to save their own life. You know, if that meant trying to be a better, nicer person to avoid a whipping. But when she died, when we all grew up and were out of the house, we would have gatherings and get back together. And I would always be the first to leave because I was always the one she would make clean up. And I would ask my sister, why don't you clean up? Every time I come over here, I have to clean. Well, she told you to do it, so you do it. So it was still that kind of thing. So it wasn't a closeness. There's no hug. There was never, well, I can't tell you when I've been touched by my mother, ever. I mean, maybe she did it when I was small. I cannot even tell you. My stepfather did more than that, than anything, of whom I really love.
You mean like hug and tell?
Hug, kiss, you know, oh, you look great. Oh, come here. But we never had any of that. Now, my younger brother had all of that.
Did she ever tell you that she loved you?
No. Goodness, that would be the ultimate great thing to hear. And then at some age, I probably would have felt strange. It's like, what? Oh, don't say that to me. You know, because we didn't learn about love until we got out. And I don't think it was all the right way.
Do you by chance see any patterns that was passed down, like any of the abuse that you went through as a child? Do you see like what the Bible would describe as a generational curse?
Yeah. With my sisters and brothers, I have two of them. Well, one of them that, like, when we turned 18, we were put out. on the street, get out, just because she felt like it. And so she asked me to come back, and I said, no, I'd rather lay in the gutter than go back and live with her. But we were all put out of the house, and, you know, and that was just what she wanted. She just wanted to be there with her younger son and her now husband. But I have a sister who lives in Houston who had two kids, and she wasn't happy in her marriage, and she was trying to make it and do whatever. And today, well, growing up, they saw that she was catering to the men more than them. And this was of all races, you know. And so he says, her son said, she just doesn't show us any love. She really didn't know how. And I talked to her one day. I said, you know, you treat your kids different. You know, she says, you know, I just don't know what love is. And I think that she wanted to someone to love her, but to me, she was going about it the wrong way by thinking her duty and sex was the key. So therefore, she wasn't in church, so she didn't know the way. At her latter age, now she's more calmer and she's in church, you know. But even today, she still does not talk to her daughter nor her son. But she had another daughter, and they are the best friends. But I don't understand it. I could not fathom having a child, period, and at some point desiring to see them if I were like that. I would have a fit if I had a kid and they wouldn't talk to me. It would just, ugh, you know, it's just weird. But it doesn't faze her at all. And I am the only one who talks to her about it, because everyone will, no, just leave her alone. No, she needs to talk about it, because she needs to feel and she needs to understand why. And it's hurt the kids. It's hurt she had a son who's doing very well in life, but he did the same thing to his daughter. So when she got married, he was upset that he wasn't thoroughly involved in everything deeply. And I looked at him, I'm like, do you not get how you treat, you abandoned her. You know, not only did you not pay child support, you wanted to her to do and be the way he told me. He says the only thing that people do in life is live and die and leave you effed. And I thought, okay, that's an interesting way to look at everything. And he said, so
I'm bringing T. Smelly in.
Control your own life, Trina. I'm sorry.
I'm bringing T. Smelly in. Go ahead.
But he says you have to live your own life and plan it the way you want it. But what he did, he eliminated everyone in our family because he didn't like the way he thought we were, whereas a lot of us can get along just fine. Now, we laugh about a lot of things that my mother did because we just laugh thinking, how could she have done that? That's so horrible, you know. But, you know, he won't even come around for whatever reason. You know, they all, but there's not that connection. We have one sister that won't come back in the family. She said she's happier apart from everything. You know, so there was that. My mother was always playing one against the other. So someone was always upset with someone. Because my mother would instigate and start stuff. It was a very sad thing. I mean, that's the unfortunate part, whereas I wanted the family. I love gatherings. I was always, and when it was Christmas, I would always be the house decorator, and I didn't want anyone else to touch it because I knew how to do it well, and I did a great job. And she would love it because I would do it. But I always gave the better gifts. You know, she had always kept her home clean. We always looked like we were immaculate, but home was hell. You guys are too quiet on me.
I'm just taking it all in. I'm like, well, I don't know.
That's all we can do right now. That's all we can do right now.
And I'll tell you what it does to me. When I meet people, I am very kind to them. You never know what anyone has gone through, and that is what my life has taught me. I'm real compassionate about people because, you know, when I first met my aunt, when I was put under the house, I went to California to stay with my father, who I really didn't know at all. I'd only met him once since when I was 16. That was it. So they took me in. His wife was excited to have me there. And I remember getting there, and my relatives were coming over to meet me. And they were like, oh, my God, you're so beautiful. And I was like, whatever. Because we, remember, it wasn't ever a thought of look in our home. It was just grow up, get out. That was the focus. And so they were focusing on looks, and that was weird to me. And they would come up to me to hug me, and my aunt did it first, and I pushed her away. That did not feel good. What are you touching me for? She says, I just want to hug you and welcome you. It's okay. I was like, I don't care what. And so I had to let her hug me, and I did not like that. That was, and no one had ever done that, ever. I mean, I'd hug my stepfather. You know, he was playful and a lot of fun. But other people outside of that, and I had a hard time. I never really grew extremely close to my father, although I was one of the major ones that would talk to my father because my mother talked so bad about everybody, and I thought, no one can be as bad as you were. So I had to give everybody else a chance, and I found that they weren't that too bad. He wanted to be closer to me and got mad when I got married that I wouldn't let him walk me down the aisle, and I'm like, I don't even know you, man. You're just a name. You didn't raise us. We were starving. $10 a month, come on. But you had another family with children. You know, they weren't his kids, but he took care of them. You know, so, and none of that family liked it. None of them came to my wedding because they didn't think I should have done that because they took me in their home. I'm like, whatever. It's not about how you treat me then. It's about the whole time. You know, so right. For me, you coming in my life, I don't like anything fake. I'm not going to be fake with you. You just be pure of heart is what I look for. And if you are not that and I can sense it, I'm stepping away. I don't waste a lot of time in situations that I don't feel are real or genuine.
Yeah.
Yet I have my younger brother.
Okay, so if you were to put together a family reunion today, well, in the future, in the near future, how many of your siblings you think would come?
My sister from Houston, who very seldom comes, but she would make an effort. My sister locally, my three brothers, and that's it. So just six of us. The seventh one wouldn't come.
Six out of seven. Okay.
Which is my oldest sister.
That's what I wanted to know.
But my sister in Houston, very seldom ever, she doesn't, you know, it's nothing for us not to hear from each other because it's not a big deal. I would love to hear from everybody. I would love for the whole family to gather. And I have tried to get them together. And then you get to a certain point, and I'll say, well, I'm going to bring so-and-so in. Well, I'm going to bow out. I'm like, We're trying, you know, we're praying about and trying because when we are together, let me tell you, the kids, we had a great, it's nothing but laughter and fun, you know, so it's hard getting that back together because everyone has created their calm and some things are just a bad memory. I don't have that anymore as long as you get, now for me to go back in the family, because after my mother's death, it took me 8 years to get back in because someone came and asked me, as my Christmas gift, would you please come to the Christmas dinner at my mother's house? And that was not a good greeting. And I had promised him because I really liked him, and I was already over there. I had to go all the way to Fort Worth, and I was treated like crap. And I thought, if they keep messing with me, I'm going to knock the hell out of one of them. And I just opened the door and went in. I said, well, if you don't like it, you need to talk to your son. Well, he didn't tell me. Well, get over it. And then they left me alone. And so what I learned is I have to push people back. And so I think for my family, if they think I'm flipping them out, it's because I have to push you back. I have to get back where you need to be. Stop. You don't have to talk to me strange. I don't deal with people cussing me out. You know, So reminders of home, like what my mother used to do, you don't need to deal with me like that. I'm much better than that. You can argue with me without cuss words and screaming and getting in my face. I don't do any of that. You know, so it's
Lacey,
just...
can I ask you a quick question? It's a little personal. Do you have any kids?
No.
Is that one of the reasons why you don't have any? Was it like a...
No, it's not. I was pregnant in my 20s and had an ectopic pregnancy. So in order for me, and I don't mind telling, in order for me to become pregnant, it would have to be an intro fertilization. And a lot of the men that I would run into wanted their own natural children. You know, they think differently now, a lot of them. You know, ways are different, the way people think, but 20 years ago, that's not how they thought. So, no. But I wasn't willing to have a baby outside of marriage. You know, so there were things I would not do. You know, I was not, you know, okay. After that first time, I thought, no, I'm going to be married if I'm going to have a child. And I was married. The marriage was not working out, and I was not going to have a baby. So the meaning of life and baby and childhood to me took on a different meaning than just, oh, I want a baby. I wasn't that
way.
Well,
I kind of asked that because, you know, you talk about abuse, and I know some people that went through some things, and that was one of the reasons why they didn't have any kids.
You know why? Because it's associated with hate. Because it's the people that abuse you, when you look at them, it's this hate that you, and I call it Satan. I call it filled with the Satan spirit. I have always called it that because I have seen that, and it's like, okay, they've got Satan, and they want to hurt me. I'm just going to sit back and be quiet. That's how I had to deal with my mother, you know. Before she put me out of the house, I don't recall what happened. It was something irrelevant and didn't make sense, but she had told me the next day she wanted me out, and I thought to myself, good, ooh, good, I'm going to leave. Where am I going to go? I started thinking, and I went next door because I used to babysit for the lady next door. But for the next 3 days, she said, I want you to clean my ceilings, all my inside cat. I had to clean the ceilings with a mop. And I said, how do I clean a ceiling with a mop? Find a way. It was just evil coming out, just evil. And then I mopped the floor. See, I was a younger girl, so I didn't learn how to do anything because I had a sister.
This was the mom, or was this?
My mother.
This was your mom?
Mm-hmm.
Your mother did this after you came back, or?
No, I hadn't left right before she put me out, 3 days before. So I couldn't drink any water, I couldn't eat food, and I could not flush the toilet, which meant I couldn't go to the restroom. So for 3 days, I never got hungry, I never got thirsty, and I never went to the restroom. Never thought about food. It was very interesting. You know, so I was in food because the older lady told me, just stay in the Word, we're going to be praying. I said, well, what am I going to do after we pray? And I have to get out. She says, God will show you what to do. I'm like, lady, have you lost your mind? I need a plan. You know, and I'm young, so you don't think right, no way. And, but the third day, well, the third day, she told me to mop the kitchen. I didn't know how to mop. So I filled the bucket with water, and I put a lot of water on the floor. And then I just started scrubbing it, and, you know, I didn't know. And so she decides she wants a cup of coffee. And she comes in, and she says, if I slip on this water, I'm killing you. And I thought, if you slip on this water, you're going to be dead. I just kind of laughed to myself. She got angry, and she threw hot coffee in my face. And I was near the drawer where the utensils were, and I opened it, and my brother slammed it shut. And then she turned around like she didn't know what had happened. But I was getting ready to get a knife. I thought, that's it for you. You threw hot coffee. It was burning in my face. She just didn't care. The more she could humiliate you. But let me tell you this. The night before I left, I was always in my bedroom, so I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't do anything. So I'd go in my bedroom and to the bathroom.
What,
it was three doors.
Before you go, Hold on real quick before you go there, right there. What was the reason that you was locked up for 3 days? I mean, I'm trying to get an idea.
What happened is that I had a boyfriend who came over, and she had asked me in my innocence to go get her a soda down the street at the corner store. And so I did. Later, I realized she wanted me out of the house so she could talk to him. And he never told me what she talked about, ever. But I didn't think about, oh, this is what she really wanted to do. And so I went, and when I was there was an older man, like, and I was, I think, 19. I was going to be a junior in college the next year. And he said, hey, how are you doing? I've seen you. Well, I said, yeah, I've seen you too. What's your name? Trina. Trina what? Trina Green. He says, well, what's your phone number? And I walked away. I'm like, you are a granddaddy. And I walked away. Well, he follows me home, but he's got a wolf in the car. So I'm not thinking they're coming my way. I knew where he lived because he was on the corner into the vicinity. So everyone knew him. And then he came. I went in and gave her soda. And then the doorbell rung, and I went to the door and opened it, and he was there. I was like, oh, my God. I went outside. I said, what are you doing here? Well, I want your phone number. Why? You've got a woman in the car. He says, well, I just want to talk to you. I said, I don't want to talk to you, and I went in. And I went out with him, my boyfriend, that night. When I came back, my father said, I want to talk to you. I said, okay. And he says, and we went in the dining room, and he says, I need you to be honest with me. Did you sleep with that older man? I said, what older man? He says, the man that came to the door. I said, you mean that man from the store? He said, yes, you know who I mean. I said, no, I really don't get what you're talking about, but why would I sleep with a man like that? I was a virgin. I said, why do y'all think? And my mother screamed, yes, you did. He came back over here and said, you gave him your phone number. Now, my mother lies. And he may have said that, but I took it as her lying. And I said, he couldn't have told you that because I didn't do it. And my father, Trina, tell me the truth. I said, first of all, telling you the truth, what would that do? You're not going to believe the truth. You're going to believe her. I said, I've already told you the truth, and you don't believe it. And that was the beginning of that. And nothing else was said after that. It's just that night she said, in 3 days you'll be gone. In my mind, I said, well, Jesus, you know, was dead 3 days. I started relating everything to the third day, then it's finished. You know, so I kind of got excited. I'm like, okay, why I didn't think it would be okay to walk out then? I really didn't know where I was going to go, you know. And then that started. But the last night I was there, I was in the bedroom, and she came to my door. And she says, I want you out of here in the morning. I said, okay, do you hear me? Oh, I hear you. She says, go get my suitcases. Now, she had some, like, Tiffany-like suitcases that I would take to college. And I remember throwing up in college, and someone told me I threw up in my luggage. And I never opened it again for months. And I forgot that I had that throw-up stain in it after we tried to clean it. I thought, I went and got the luggage, set it by the door of the bedroom, and went in the bedroom, closed the door. She flung the door open. And she says, do you see this? And I said, yeah, I see it. It was an axe, big axe for a tree. And she says, you see it? I said, yes, I see it. You F with me, this is what your face is going to look like. So she started chopping the suitcase. And I started thinking, okay, I'm going to go through this door. If she starts coming near me, it's a bathroom that had a door to each bedroom, and then there was another door to the living room. And I thought, I'll lock this door, and I'll go out this door, and I'll go out the patio. I had a plan. And she says, do you see this? I said, yeah, I see it. You messed with me. Now, I haven't even spoken to her. So why are you messing with me? You know, but that night, everyone went to sleep. I never slept for 3 nights because I didn't know what she was going to do at night. So I had to stay awake and alert. And I saw her pacing the living room. I saw that lit cigarette fire going back and forth until 5 a.m. And at 5 a.m. she went to sleep and got up at 9 o'clock, and they took my brother to a baseball game, and she told me, when I get back, I don't want you here. I said, when you get back, you'll never see me again. And when she got back, I was gone. And when my neighbor, who I went to her house, I used to babysit, she says, Trina, they're home. I said, oh. I said, She says, they're going to go looking for you. I said, no, they're not. They don't care. And so my father came running out of the house, got in the car, went driving around looking for me. And I wished I could have told them, you know, but I thought I don't ever want to be around them again. And that was it for a few years.
Wow.
Mm.
How do you feel like they're getting over it? Or do you feel like your siblings are over it or has healed from it?
Well, I think in some ways, like my sister who is in Houston, she said to me one day about 8 years ago, she said, you know, if she could just tell us she loved us. And so they long for love. My other sister who lives local, I watch her and I see her giving an extreme amount of herself to people who don't deserve it. And, you know, it reminds me of what she did for her. Like, she kept going around my mother, even with the abusive talk, to her. And I would be like, why are y'all just standing there listening to her? Tell her to stop it or walk away. And they would never do it. So I see that same pattern. My younger brother was young and always afraid, so he became the appeaser. So when he would think something would be getting ready to start, he would do a flip or something and make the younger kids laugh. And that would really change the atmosphere. So he learned to appease, and I see him doing that with his girlfriends.
I got one quick off the wall question.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you said that about the brother, you do remember that this is not the brother that had to go outside in the tornado storm to move the car, is it?
Yes. It is him.
Okay.
Yes. He'll do just about anything for you. Let me say this. I have all of the children are nice. The siblings are nice people. And we're always told, it's amazing, y'all must have had angels walking near you. You guys should not have come out this way. And we never understood. I didn't understand it until I got older. And they explained it to me. They said, we saw the hell y'all would go through. We hear the cries in your house. But we knew we couldn't do anything. You know, back then, as a black person, they didn't care that you were beating your kids. They didn't care. You know, it was just a thing. But we are still nice people, you know, that do for other people. And that amazes me about the experience and the behavior. You know, so, yeah, I see that a lot. But I'm closer to my older brother and my younger brother more than anybody. And simply because they're nice people.
Métis, I got to ask this question. If there is somebody listening who might be going through some of what you have went through, or maybe they're going through exactly what you went through, what can they do? How can they get help?
You mean while at home?
Yes,
or being an adult? That's hard
because nowadays everything works different.
Nowadays everything works different and, you know, you're taken away and you don't know if you'll be abused or raped or you don't know what's going to happen to you in a home. So for us, it was better to deal with that and have a little bit of pleasure here and there than to be taken away. The thing is that regardless of who your mom is, you love your mother internally. So there's that connection. And it's hard to separate that connection. Now, you don't like the hate that she's putting forth. Mine, I was able to separate a lot of that. I carried a lot of that burden until she passed away. When she passed away and I heard she passed away, all my feelings went away. It was the strangest thing, you know, but I didn't have that why couldn't she, oh, I wish she would have, or I wish we could have. You know, that kind of thing. Because after that, like 20 years ago, I would try to go over there on her birthday and ask, would you want to go out to dinner? And we would go out to dinner, which she very seldom did, and it would be a quiet dinner. It was weird, but I wanted to get her out of the house, you know, kind of be around her, you know, all kind of different. It was just different. But for older, younger people, I look at how things are working now, and they don't deserve to be in that situation. I cannot stand to see a child even getting a spanking, because a lot of parents I see still spank hard, and you've got these little, you know, these little bodies. My nephew, he had four boys. I would have to leave their house whenever I knew they were going to get a spanking, because they would look at me like help, and I knew that I couldn't do anything because that, they were their parents, and I would go home because I couldn't bear it. You know, they're older now. They're all in high school, and they're all doing fine, very close. But for adults, I would say get counseling, you know, or find someone you could talk to that sometimes, for me, it was just talking. It was getting closer to God, and it took a long time. See, it took a long time to understand that it took a long time to understand that that was where, that home was where he wanted me. Because I do believe that God places you where he wants you for whatever reason. I still don't know what my purpose is in this world. This may be it. I don't know. You know, but I still ponder over that. I don't totally enjoy living here in this world. I would love to go to heaven. I do believe that we came from heaven and we were sent here for a job. And I'm always asking God, you know, I hope I'm doing my job. I don't even know what it is. You know, show me what my job is. And it could just be being kind to somebody or talking and, you know, telling someone my experience. But I think it's important for them, and it's hard to believe that you can get past this, you know, but you have to talk. We get past it in our family with laughter, and after a lot of laughter and talk, it started out as, can you believe we went through that? I can't believe she did that to us. And remember when she did that, and eventually somebody would talk or they would do something my mother would do, and we would die laughing. So we really don't talk about it anymore. It's just a laughter thing when we remember, you know. And I could see it in their face. They're like, wow, I wish she was still here. You know, I only want her here for me if I could have a relationship with her, like a mother and the daughter. You know, I don't know what that kind of love is at all, you know. And I say that lightly because I don't want to go to heaven and God says, but do you remember this? And then I'm going to have to say, yes, I remember that. And it's so hard when, you know, you have someone that, the thought of people raising their hand up to me is the most disgusting thing I could experience, because I never believed I deserved your hand on me. And even as a kid, I always believed that, which is why I was verbal, I think. But I think counseling helped me. When she taught me how to deal with my mother on that one level, that was a lot of pleasure for me. Not, oh, I fixed her. No, it wasn't anything like that. It was like, ah. Now she knows she can't bother me, and it worked. But, you know, she would do it to the others, and they wouldn't do anything. And I'm just not like that.
But sounds like to me you're the most verbal of them all.
Mm-hmm. You know, they don't talk about it. They just don't. I don't see a problem with talking about it whenever, not like a constant thing, but, you know, whenever. But yeah, I don't have a problem with talking about it because it's interesting to know I've lived through that. It is a very interesting thing. Now, if I had to pass away and come back and go through, God said I want to take you through it one more time, I would say no thank you. Could you give the job? I want to decline this application, please.
I didn't mean to laugh, but that was fun. Just the way you said it. But believe me, I totally understand. I thank you for
a quick question. I got one last quick question.
So in today's society, if this was going on and you were younger and you happened to get CPS involved, how do you think the turnout would have been?
Oh, we would have been taken away without a doubt. I mean, it would have, we'd be, and I think that, I think emotionally, it would have been a horrible mental separation. Although there was extreme abuse,
so
there is a connection. Huh?
Because there were so many of you?
Well, even if it was just one, you have got that connection with your mother. You know, why don't most kids that are young just run out and say, I don't want to live here, she's doing this. They stay in that house and they go to their bedroom and cry because there is that connection and that fear. So it's, you know, it's a combo thing. Bonds are very strong. That is the one thing I've learned in that. I mean, I care about all my sisters and brothers and wish we could all get together and because we're a laughter family. You know, we don't get together. We're not somber. We don't get together. You know what? We haven't gotten together and had arguments. We have not done that as adults ever, ever, because it's just a bunch of fun. Now, I will say, getting back together with siblings, I knew the only way I could do it was to keep my mouth shut, meaning forget everything in the past. And so whenever anyone is trying to come back in, I tell them, listen, your survival of getting back with your family is you can't talk about anything in the past, and there's some things that happened that a lot of the family members that aren't back for that reason. And that person who did it will not apologize, you know. And so, but I came back because my nephew asked me. My nieces and nephews had gotten together and said, we're going to start with Trina. You know, and they told me later, you know, we all decided, we plotted to get you back in. I didn't have any kids, but I was the babysitter for whomever would let me babysit their children. And, you know, like teaching them their first thing, how to hide and go seek at my house, way to do it in the dark with night lights on. You know, there were times we had to do it with our Halloween masks. It was really scary. But we had a freaking blast, you know, and I had barbecues. I always had parties and dinners at my house for everyone. But, you know, but the kids were a big deal to me. You know, I didn't have them, but I loved everyone that I came in contact with. I actually overloved them too much. You guys are
well,
fine.
I wouldn't wish it on anybody in the world. And when I heard about COVID coming, I thought, ooh, people are going to be stuck in the house. They're not going to have money. They're not going to have food. You know, the president isn't offering not just anything but enough support. And when I heard the numbers going up for unemployment, my heart went out. Let me just say this. God has always taken care of me. I have always had a good job. I've never really ever had a difficult interview ever in my life, and it has amazed me, you know, and I'm looking forward to retirement soon, but I've always had favor in my job. I have been very well taken care of, you know, so I wish that I could help some people. I don't know how. There's so many avenues you could take, you know, but all I could do now is just pray for them, but I would encourage counseling. If they're adults and they carry that over into their adult life, get out of it. I mean, I'm not encouraging divorce, but if patterns or ways that you could find to stand up for yourself and say no. People only do what they know they can. That's what I learned about people. They only do to you what they know they can, which means you allow it. And if you start allowing it, you're going to have a lot of pushback, but eventually they will know. And you got to do that with prayer, too.
Métis, we're going to have to do a part two to this interview.
Okay.
Because we've got about 5 minutes left. T. Smiley, are you still there?
Now, I think he's still here. I know he's still here. He may be on another call, but I know he's still here.
Is that Kia D?
Yeah, it's Kia D. I've been here.
I didn't know you was here.
Kia D, do you have
I wanted to come in quiet just so I could listen today. I didn't want to interrupt the flow. Thank you, B-Ray, for not announcing me. I appreciate it because I didn't want to be announced. I just wanted to sit back and listen and enjoy. It was a great interview and very so much information. Métis, I'm sorry that you experienced that. And, I mean, I know firsthand about that information. I truly do, and it's unfortunate. And, yes, T. Smiley is here.
Okay, T. Smiley, I was going to ask you to pray us out. We got about 4 minutes left. If you don't mind, pray us out tonight.
Yes, sir.
B-Ray, get me a good one ready. Métis,
thank
you so much.
Get us some
roll
some mo.
You know.
He said we can't do roll some mo.
Oh, man. Okay. We got to get another Lucky Day song. Shout out to Lucky Day. That is Métis' favorite
artist
in the world right now.
We ain't playing no Lucky Day on my show. Now, come on.
What about some Afro Man?
T. Smiley, pray us out. Pray us out. And, no, actually, let us have something actually inspirational. I mean, God is still good through it all. And this account, this testimony is too great not to give God the glory.
Amen.
I got you.
Yep. All right, with that being said, Father God, we thank you once again for waking us up this morning. God, we thank you for allowing us life, health, and strength. God, we ask that you just continue to bless Métis, God. Continue just to give her the wisdom, God, and the will just to keep on going forward, oh God, in your name, God. We ask that you just continue to bless each and every one of us that's here on present on this radio show, God. Thank you for mind, body, and soul. We thank you for Big Joe. We thank you for B-Ray, Métis, Kid D, and T. Smiley, and everybody else that's part of this show, God. We ask that you just continue to bless us and meet us here back again tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. In Jesus' name, I pray. Amen.
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 This is the mind, body, and soul
Amen.
With Big Joe. Be right. Play the album. Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Struggle from day to day. I have to realize that it's not my battle. It's not my battle to fight. I have to know if I put it in the head, everything will be alright. Yeah. Let go and let God. Let go, let God. Oh, let go and let God. Let go and let God. My brother, let go and let God. My sister, you can't handle it. Let God. Oh, let go and let God. Let go.
Thanks for tuning in to We Talk Radio Network.